The kings of Macedonia, Alexander the Great, the Aegis War in early April 331 BCE. Of course, Alexander had marched out of Egypt. He followed the same route as during the invasion, no doubt with similar arrangements to supply food and water for his men, and went back to Tyre, where the army would concentrate, ready to advance once the harvest ripened in early summer. En route, he learned that one of his men, put in charge of Samaria, had been captured by a band of Samaritans and burned alive. Alexander marched to the region and demanded that the culprits be handed over to him for execution. If there had ever been widespread unrest rather than the actions of an isolated group, this collapsed as soon as he arrived at the head of a column. The men were handed over for punishment and a replacement appointed for the dead officer. In Tyre, Alexander once again sacrificed at the Temple of Hercules and held another festival. The prestige of the victorious leader of the Greeks and generous prizes on offer were attracting many famous athletes and performers to these events. One was Thessalus, the tragic actor who had acted as envoy when Alexander intervened in the negotiations between Philip and Podoxidorus of Cara and ended the marriage alliance planned for Aristides. A past victor at several of the major Athenian festivals, he remained a friend and favorite of the young king. In spite of this, he was beaten to the prize by Athenodorus, a rival whose record was almost as distinguished, and had broken a contract to perform in Athens in his enthusiasm to attend Alexander's event. Alexander's support for Thessalus was public, as was his willingness to accept the judge's decision regardless. A little later, the Athenians fined Athenodorus for breach of contract, and the actor wrote to the king asking him to intervene. Alexander declined to overrule the city's authority and instead sent money to pay the fine. Alexander's enthusiasm for the ritual and competition of a Greek festival was deep-rooted and genuine, and was shared by most senior Macedonians and perhaps many soldiers. He was also politic, proclaiming that he and the Macedonians were proper Greeks and therefore fitting leaders for the great Hellenic War of revenge that still had to be won. While he had not scrupled to poach participants from events in other cities, or at least not to forbid it, in every other way, Alexander acted the part of a good king rather than a tyrant. Thus, he didn't try to influence the judges in favor of Thessalus, and subsequently accepted the Athenians' authority ruling against Athenodorus, while at the same time ensuring that the victor didn't suffer any loss for his enthusiasm to come to Tyre and perform before him. Such marks of respect never altered the fact that Alexander's leadership of the Greeks relied on Macedonian military and financial dominance, but they made it easier for the people to accept. Relations with the polis had always been important. Neither Philip nor his son consciously provoked public opinion unless they saw some advantage to doing so. In 331 BCE, with Alexander preparing to drive deep into Persia, the mood in Greece was particularly important as Aegeus III made plain his determination to assert Spartan power. Thus, Alexander continued to be generous in his response to the petitions from the other Greek cities. He ruled in favor of the leaders on several islands against the local Macedonian commanders and accepted Mytilene's claim that he had only defected to Persia because it was unable to defend against the Persian fleet. That fleet now gone, drastically reducing Darius's opportunities to send military and monetary aid to anyone willing to oppose Alexander. Even so, Aegis had already received a little funding and, more importantly, a significant force of mercenaries. Alexander dispatched ships, many of them manned by Phoenicians, who not long before had been on the other side. They were sent to Crete, the Peloponnesus, to harass the Spartans and their allies. As far as possible, Alexander needed to convince other cities that joining Sparta would be unwise. In this, he was helped by widespread distaste for the Spartans, fueled by memories of their conduct in the past. What Athens did was especially important, for it still had the capacity to form a large navy and muster substantial number of hoplites. An Athenian delegation reached the king, repeating the earlier request for the release of citizens captured with the mercenaries at Granicus. This time, Alexander agreed, even though the war with Persia was not over, presumably to be judged that the goodwill he would earn in this way was more valuable than keeping the men as hostages. He still had the 20 Athenian ships and their crews, as well as some of their fellow citizens amongst his allied soldiers and his army. The chronology of the Aegis War is confused, permitting widely divergent reconstructions, although most likely it didn't begin until after Alexander had marched eastward from Tyre. Sparta had not joined the common peace or the treaty that followed Philip's victory at Chaeronea. Hence Alexander's pointed comments when dictating spoils in 334 BCE. So that Aegeus's war was not in any legal sense a rebellion or a direct attack on Macedonia. He acted to assert Spartan power, and his targets were long-standing enemies of his country, most notably Megapolis, the city formed by freed Helots. However, his enemy was part of the common peace and alliance, so that an attack on them was a violation of the treaty, which meant that other cities, and most of all Macedonia, ought to come to their aid. Aegis had prepared for war for some time and chose his moment with care, and the backing of a strong mercenary force to aid Sparta's own army. Almost all of Sparta's allies in the Peloponnesus joined him, especially when he defeated the troops led against him by Choragus, the first Macedonian officer to respond to the challenge. Traditional enemies, notably the Messenians and the Megapolitans, opposed him, but most of the Achaeans did join the cause. Athens did not. Consent and recent treatment by Alexander, making it easier for Athenians to recall his might and their long-standing rivalry with Sparta. Before Issus, Demosthenes had hoped for a Macedonian disaster, gleefully predicting that Alexander's men would be trampled beneath the hoofs of Darius's cavalry. After the battle, the orator had sought to be reconciled with the king, and for once did not urge his fellow citizens to join in a new war against Macedon. It is possible that if more Greek states had joined with Aegis, and if Darius had managed to send more aid in the early years of the war, then Antipater might have been thoroughly defeated, but this should not be taken for granted, nor was it the best strategy open to Darius. Unity and cooperation did not come naturally to the polis, especially since helping to overthrow one dominant power usually resulted in setting up another that would soon prove as tyrannical or worse. Alexander had left his lieutenants with substantial military and financial resources, as events proved. The king and his main army were in Asia, all was advancing. For Darius, a decisive end of the war and proof of his own right to rule required him to defeat Alexander, not to wage war by proxy in distant Greece. So now we'll be heading towards the great battle of Arbela, or Gaugamela, and we'll see the various stages of that. Now the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch. Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy. History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond. In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. Some additional sources for the sections on Alexander rules would include, of course, Arrians, The Campaigns of Alexander. In the Footsteps of Alexander the Great by Michael Wood. The Wars of Alexander the Great by Haeckel, and The Story of Alexander's Empire by Mahaffey. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.